Module 6, Lesson 3, The Partnership Path. What you'll discover. We'll talk about partnership versus dominator models, the extreme importance of family, what happens with the girl effect, and we'll talk about the way forward. This lesson is heavily influenced by the work of Rhianne Eisler, who I'm a huge fan of. She's a world-renowned author, cultural historian, systemic scientist, educator, attorney, speaker, and social activist. She is also the president of the Center for Partnership Studies. And I know you've seen this quote before in the snapshot for this module, but it's worth bringing up again. She says, "So much today that may seem new or even radical, such as gender equality and a more peaceful way of life, has ancient roots going back thousands of years before the cultural shift to domination about 5,000 years ago." So we talked about that in lesson one of this module, that shift to domination 5,000 years ago. How do we take these principles and apply them to today? Great question. Rhianne answers that with all of her work. Rhianne says that we often get so caught up in debates about which social constructs are better, religious versus secular, communism versus capitalism, Eastern or Western, left or right, etc. But she points out the societies in all of these constructs have been oppressive, violent, and unjust. Rhianne has proposed that we ought to understand human culture and societies in terms of two basic social constructs. One, domination. Two, partnership. So what exactly does that mean? Well, in the domination system, this is a social possibility that looks like this. Top-down authority. Subordination of the female half of humanity. Devaluing of caring, nonviolence, and other soft values. Remember, we talked about those as being feminine values. And there's a high degree of built-in fear. So this picture, I think, is perfect to talk about domination system. Also, I think triangle, because we're talking about top-down authority. You've got a few people at the top and everyone below them. This is what a domination system looks like. And accepting of violence, including chronic warfare. So I always think of this when I see the news and I see in my own country, the United States, massive school shootings. And we all kind of go, "Oh, it's another one. Oh, it's sad. We'll pray for you. There's nothing we can really do." This is a big indication we're in a domination system. We're so accepting of violence and we just kind of go, "Well, that's the way it has to be." Another clue that you're in the midst of a domination system is when the country is chronically at war. What then would a partnership system look like? The social possibility of partnership would look like more democratic organization in both the family and the state. Male and female halves of humanity are equally valued. Woohoo! Caring and nonviolence are highly regarded in both men and women, and there's a low degree of institutionalized fear. Rhianne talks about how, although they are far from utopias, the closest thing we kind of have to partnership systems right now in the Western world is Northern Europe, where they have long maternity leaves, where fathers also get paternity leaves, where they have high rates of social structures to take care of people, low rates of chronic warfare or institutionalized fear. So we know that humans have an incredible capacity for caring, consciousness, and creativity. We know because we see these things exhibited, we also experience these in our own life. We also know that there's human capacity for violence, destruction, and cruelty, both in ourselves and in our culture. So, what are the social conditions at play that dictate which capacities we express? We're typically led to believe that domination is just human nature. This is just the way it is. It's always been, and it always will be. We typically begin learning about the basis of modern society here in the Greco-Roman times, where war, domination, violence, and art that depicted those things began to have a stronghold in cultures worldwide. But let's take this example. This is a fresco of Alexander the Great from 100 BC. But we learned in the last lesson that 3,500 years ago, in the same area, there existed a Minoan civilization where both females and males held spiritual authority, positions of leadership, and valued life-giving erotic energy above all else. It seemed to be a culture of equality, peace, and partnership. And we sometimes hear the excuse like, oh yeah, equality, peace, and partnership, that might have worked when we were living in caves. But Minoan Crete disproves this argument because it was a complex society with architecture, indoor plumbing, paved roads, the whole shebang. Another reason we believe we're programmed for violence is our primate heritage. We learn in school that our closest relative is the chimpanzee, sharing a whopping 98.7% of our same DNA and rendering us virtually incapable of changing our similarities to them. Chimpanzees are organized through a male-dominated social structure, typically with one alpha male and several females. They exhibit intense aggression between different groups, and that aggression can become lethal. They use tools and cooperatively hunt monkeys, and they've been known to eat infants of other chimpanzees. I mean, I like chimpanzees, but this is kind of intense. However, this is so fascinating. We're almost never taught about what people refer to as the forgotten ape, our equally close primate relative, the bonobos. They share the same, a whopping 98.7% of our DNA, the same percentage as chimpanzees. And they have more in common with humans than they do with other apes. The bonobos, they have partnership structures with female leaders. They have socio-sexual contact that is focused on pleasure and bonding. They've been known to have same-sex sexual contact. Their sexual encounters are face-to-face, which is the only ape that does that. And they do not exhibit lethal aggression. Plus, they don't hunt monkeys. Instead, they play with and groom them, which is what I'd much rather do with a monkey, wouldn't you? This is fascinating. Both of these groups of primates share the exact same percentage of DNA as humans, and yet we only learn about one. We learn about the one that progresses the idea of male domination, violence, being natural. Rianne Eisler says, bonobos are still generally ignored in both the scientific and popular literature about evolution. Perhaps because they disprove the notion that a male-dominated, chronically violent social organization is an inevitable part of humanity's primate evolutionary heritage. Something else that the Center for Partnership Studies points out is that neuroscientists say we're wired for mutuality. They say that if we compare brain scans, our pleasure centers light up more when we do something helpful than they do when we do something just for ourselves. So more of our brain is lighting up when we're doing something for others. On the flip side, stress can inhibit our capacity for empathy, caring, and mutuality by changing brain neurochemistry. Stress, especially early childhood stress, can start to shut down some of these neurotransmitters in the brain, making it harder for us as adults to exhibit empathy, caring, and mutuality. So how do we make sure that doesn't happen? How do we make sure the brain is a big, colorful palette of neural pathways that wire us for empathy, caring, and love? Rhianne Eisler says, it is our cultural rather than our natural environments that today most affect what aspects of our large biological repertoire will be expressed or inhibited. And what is the foundational cultural environment that we're exposed to, especially as young children? The family. In the family, we learn social constructs of the relations between male and female half of society and the relations between parent and child. Children learn before their brains are fully formed what is considered moral or immoral, desirable or undesirable, and possible or impossible. So with family being the foundation, let's look then at the difference between a domination style family and a partnership style family. Dominator family model typically means authority is not to be challenged. Typically, masculine values such as strength, decisiveness, and athleticism carry more importance. Typically, feminine values such as nurturing, compassion, and forgiveness carry less importance, and the full expression of self is discouraged, meaning you're not allowed to have both masculine and feminine qualities expressed in an individual. On the flip side, a partnership family model is where decisions are made more democratically. But just to clarify here, there's definitely a hierarchy. There are still parents, teachers, authority figures, but they're not authoritarian. Decisions are made more democratically. Typically, masculine values, such as strength and athleticism, carry the same importance as feminine values, such as nurturing and compassion. Family tasks, including childcare, are shared equally, and the full expression of self is encouraged. Some people still don't buy, though, that family is that important, but consider this. What's the first thing that extremely violent regimens do when they take power? One of the first things the Nazis did was they decree that women should not hold positions of power and should defend the role of motherhood in the home. According to Wikipedia, women lived within a regimen characterized by policy of confining them to the roles of mother and spouse and excluding them from all positions of responsibility, notable in political and academic spheres. Let's take a more modern day example. ISIS, the most famous terrorist organization of today. The first thing they institute is they strip women of their rights. They become like property. They can be killed for disobeying a man. They're not allowed to be out in public without a man. They can be traded even, kept against their will. It's one of the first things that ISIS does, strip women of their power. So in much, much less extreme cases, there are still many different spiritualities or faiths today that teach that strong man rule is divinely ordained in the family. Man rules over children, woman, plants, earth, animal, water, you name it, they're the rulers. But with these models, some extreme and some more subtle, men are free to express masculine values and women are free to express feminine values, leaving no room for the full expression of human nature in either. According to Rhianne Eisler, we want to leave behind socialization that leaves both men and women in shackles and embrace a more holistic approach to relating through partnership. So let's talk for a moment. What would happen in a society where women and girls were allowed to become educated? They were allowed to be leaders and thought change makers, and they were allowed to do that in a safe and supportive environment. What would happen is called the girl effect. The girl effect is a series of studies that found when you give a girl from an impoverished area an education, statistically, that girl will marry older, have fewer children, seek health care for her family, invest over 20% more into her family and community than a man will, and become the most influential force in her community to break the cycle of poverty. So I was traveling to a country in which I was told that country has decided no longer to loan money to men. I was told because the men were drinking the money away, or they were cheating on their wives. The wives and children weren't getting better health care. They weren't getting better educations. Whereas when that country started to loan money to just women, the loans got paid back, and they were seeing a notable difference in the communities as these women were literally lifting their families and communities out of poverty. Which reminds me of a quote by Regina Thomasauer. She says, "Women are the greatest untapped natural resource on the planet." But just a reminder, the work ahead is not for women alone. This is not work that demonizes men or leaves them in the dust. It's for women and men, where we come together in partnership for a better world. We come together for this idea that masculine and feminine values in each one of us are important, that we don't want to be dominated, we don't want to live in a world of fear, that we want to live in a world of partnership, collaboration, and full expression for all of humanity. So if we want that, if that's the dream for most of us, then what's the way forward? To move forward, we have to leave behind this old programming, this thinking, this notion that domination is natural to humankind and it's the only way forward. Instead, embrace partnerships in our family, our work environments, and our communities. According to the centerforpartnership.com, these are the ways to do that. Exhibit partnership in the family. That means men help with childcare. Men help with things around the house. Women are able to make decisions sometimes. Both of these things are seen as totally acceptable and welcome. Raise awareness about partnership versus domination systems. Pass national and international laws criminalizing child abuse. We have to take care of our little ones because remember, stress and trauma is going to shut down parts of their brain that make them less wired for empathy and caring in the future. Reduce family exposure to violent content in movies, TV shows, and games because these things normalize the idea of violence. And pressure religious leaders to take a strong stand against violence towards women and children. If any of these ideas are interesting to you or partnership, like you'd really like to know more, I encourage you to go to centerforpartnership.com. Rianne has lots of different classes, lots of different seminars, lots of free content. You can learn how to incorporate this more into your families and your world. So here are some really cool things to note. One, as the status of women rises, economy and environment becomes more sustainable. Two, as the status of women rises, nurturing and nonviolence become more revered in society, which means acceptable for men to exhibit those behaviors of nurturing and nonviolence. And three, as status of women rises, menstruation and women's issues become more openly discussed. So things like high maternal death rates in hospitals, or endometriosis epidemic, or even sexual assault. These things become more openly discussed. And what starts to happen when these things start to be more openly discussed is we get movements like Me Too, or we get people fighting for policy change like free menstrual products in prisons or the end of the tampon tax. It also normalizes things like menstruation, which then influences the next generation of girls. They're growing up in a household where there's not shame associated with talking about these kinds of things. That education and openness about menstruation then teaches girls to not only understand their cycles, but also trust their bodies. Why is that important? Because a woman who trusts her body learns to trust her feelings. A woman who trusts her feelings learns to trust her voice. A woman who trusts her voice learns to use her voice. And a woman can use her voice to change the world. Empowering and educating women can change the world. Talking about these topics that have been pushed off into a corner as feminine problems, feminine issues, in a partnership society, they're equally valued. So if you are interested in this work, I encourage you to read the books of Rianne Eisler or check out centerforpartnership.com. Also, for a quick overview of dominator versus partnership systems, I have created a little cheat sheet for you. If you're interested, go ahead and print that out. That way you don't have to memorize all of that information we talked about. There's a lot of information to digest here, so take the time you need. And when you're ready, I'll see you in the next lesson.